I think there's a lot to be said for being passionate about certain disciplines in which you can excel in or be an expert in. If you're not having fun, you're not necessarily going to unlock the potential of that creativity.
Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with Kevin LaRue. He's vice president over at MacFun here in the USA. Kevin, say hello.
Hello.
And you know, in our pre-interview chat, actually you just mentioned that you're in San Diego. I'm over here in Michigan. Hello from Michigan. I am a little bit jealous of you.
Well, hello from San Diego. As I mentioned, I spent a lot of summers in Michigan and really enjoy that state. And in fact, as a youth, it got me involved in sport kiting. You know, you got some terrific winds that come off the lake there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, as a youth, I was quite intrigued by the sport of kiting.
You know, Michigan is awesome. I don't want to sound like I don't appreciate Michigan, because you do get all of the seasons here, and with the lakes and the winds and everything, it can make for some summer fun, for sure.
Oh, right on.
For sure. And just to give our listeners a little bit of background on how we met, I actually ran into Kevin at Photoshop World in Vegas, maybe almost a month ago, would you say, Kevin?
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. Time flies when you're in the photo industry.
It does. And at those types of events, it seems like being sleep deprived just kind of comes with the territory. And so the night that we actually ran into each other, I know it was the night before I was going to fly out, actually. So we literally had a couple seconds to talk as I was on my way out the door from a pinball party that photofocus.com was throwing. And so how funny that at the very tail end of that, we actually got a chance to get introduced to each other before I flew out.
Oh, I'm so happy we did. You know, I'd spent the evening there. We actually co-sponsored the party along with Photo Focus, and spent a lot of the party with Rich Harrington, who owns Photo Focus, and Matt Kluskowski and his wife, and had a marvelous chat with Joel Grimes as well. Mm. You know, it was so much fun playing these vintage pinball games. And this is the Pinball Museum, and they have yes. hundreds of these games that are still in working order. Games that I played, I'm not ashamed to admit, as a youth. But I'm super glad that we got connected there and that we stayed connected after the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first, give us an overview of yourself and your background, how you ended up doing what you're doing today, for those who may not be familiar with you.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the question. Well, from humble beginnings in Tucson, Arizona, where I fell in love with the Macintosh computer after college. I was working in a print shop. And, you know, I felt like my calling was towards California because, after all, that's where all the software manufacturers are, software vendors. And but silly me, I settled on beautiful San Diego instead of realizing that all the action was really happening in San Francisco. So, you know, fortunately for me, there was a company called Silicon Beach Software, which was a graphics and gaming company. I think we'd call them today kind of an independent or indie developer. Mm-hmm. I was employee number 7 there. We grew to nearly 100 people before we were bought by Aldus Corporation. They're the guys that made PageMaker back in the day. And of course, Aldus in the early 90s was acquired by Adobe, and then we're off to the races. Interestingly enough, Silicon Beach, now I'm probably older than a lot of people in your audience maybe, but this was going back to 1987. Interestingly enough, the company had released a product called Digital Darkroom. Now, this is in 1987, 88 time frame. Mm-hmm. And Digital Darkroom was, we built it, and I think it was, the first grayscale image editor available. And so this thing did have tinting, it had grayscale editing, it had magic wands in it, and all that kind of stuff. And this had been out on the market probably 6 months or so. before the Knoll brothers came knocking and wanted to show a little program that we now know is Photoshop to us. And so we, you know, ultimately Adobe picked up on that, and I think that it's a, it's a fantastic thing what they've done with that software, of course. But that just a little trivia for your audience that I've been involved in graphic software and photography software for a number of years, ran my own company in the mid-90s doing multimedia authoring. So this is with a company that we had some software that kind of like Apple's old HyperCard that let you put multimedia video, images, content together. A lot of people were using it to create educational laser discs at the time. Now we're going way back. not to get too long-winded here, but you know, fast forward 10 or 12 years, and I got a call from my friend Lori Rubin, who is a fantastic photographer in her own right, wildlife and nature photographer, and she was working at a company called Nick Software, and this is in 2006. And I went in and interviewed with the founders of Nick to come in as a product manager on future products, unnamed products, which I thought was going to be very exciting. And it was. However, the products were so far into the future that they really needed me more on the marketing and PR side. And so that kind of jump-started my career into the fabulous photography industry that you and I are both in. And, got me, really to appreciate the kinds of people that photographers are. I mean, there's a characterization, a bent, a lilt to the step, a twinkle in the eyes of many, many photographers that I met over the years.
And you know,
go ahead.
Very quickly, I love hearing about the history. Especially going back into the 90s and the 80s. Full disclosure, I was born in 84. So
there you go.
All that to say, for me, you can never be too long-winded in talking about the history of the photography industry. And I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I went to the University of Michigan School of Art and Design. And the first year I was there as a freshman was when they closed down the darkroom. Like they shut out film photography.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if they've reopened it. It would be wonderful if they have, but that is something that I have yet to really dip my toes into. So for me, it was right into digital. Like that was the only type of photography class that we could take as a freshman. And so I love hearing about, back in the day, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. You know, I actually, even though I shot film as a kid and just kind of as a hobby, I never actually got into the darkroom myself, and I do regret that. I worked on the high school newspaper, and obviously the photographers back in the late 70s and early 80s, when I was going to high school, they were developing their film in our school darkrooms, and in fact, my teenage son is taking photography this semester as a senior, and they have a darkroom at our high school.
So
I'm hoping that he'll be able to actually. Before I know it, I'm sure one of our household bathrooms will be taken over. I hope so. I really hope so. I want to encourage that. But I went into digital pretty straight away, and I've been what I would call a software nerd forever. I just think it's a to me, software runs the world. The chips and the screens and the input devices, those are all well and good, but those are just tools to I think access and unlock the magic that software can bring. And it's never more evident than in photographic software. It's just the things that artists can ultimately end up with to realize their vision is just to me is still mind-boggling.
That was one of the reasons I'm really excited about our conversation, because of your background with photography software, and also because you are just into the photography industry. I mean, that's, what you do. So we have a mixture of the photography industry plus software. So I'm curious, could you tell us how you interact with photographers?
Well, yeah, I mean, like many folks in your listening audience, I'm a huge fan of the pros. I take inspiration from them. I love to follow them on Instagram and Facebook and other social. And so, how I, I'm fortunate enough, after the Google purchase at Nick to have landed at MacFun and kind of continued my career arc in the photo software world. MacFun's a fantastic little company. We're growing. We've got some terrific tools, and so fortunately, working for a photo software company and attending trade shows and being on a lot of these. Circuits, I guess. It gives me the opportunity to rub elbows with, I think, some of the best photographers in the business. As I mentioned earlier, these folks are inspirational. They're oftentimes they're the most humble and giving people and fun and social guys that I've ever met in my career. And so, the way I interact with photographers today is simply to, isn't necessarily for a specific business purpose. It's literally to get to know them, and if there's some mutual things we can do together, that's fantastic. But I'm like a kid in a candy store when I walk down a trade show aisle. I want to meet Eddie Tapp, or I want to shake hands with Dan Steinhardt from Epson, or on and on and on. I mean, I was talking to Elia Licardi yesterday, followed by Joel Grimes, and that's just how the day goes. It's great to meet these people and to talk about their current projects, and I think once the relationship gets going, there's a more full exploration about what we can do together that's mutually beneficial. But at its basic level, I just love to meet these people.
Awesome. Awesome. And with your wide exposure to such talent, I want to dig into your brain, into how you see things.
Oh,
In particular with finding our own style, our own photographic style, but also in marketing our own photography businesses as well. Are you cool with those two topics?
no. Of course, yeah. I hope
Awesome.
I can contribute to the discussion.
Oh, I'm sure. Let's dive right in. So, one thing that I see a lot of photographers struggle with, and myself included at times, is that it's hard for us to find our own unique style. So in this digital age, we're just flooded with images everywhere you look. And there's so much amazing talent out there. There are so many trends out there. There are also classic styles out there. Do you have any advice for how we could find our own unique style?
Well, the emphasis is on own unique style, of course. I think every person's different. The brain operates in a different way. So I think, almost anybody can understand the technical aspects of using the camera, right? And I think nobody would argue with that point. But after that, it's kind of this combination of creative vision. I think there's a lot to be said for being passionate about certain disciplines in which you can excel in or be an expert in. If you're not having fun, you're not necessarily going to unlock the potential of that creativity. So, for example, I in talking with Joel Grimes yesterday, I mean, it's very clear from his portfolio that shooting gritty, dramatic sports figures is one of his passions, and he's excellent at it and known for it. And so that without having that drive towards a vision, he may not have achieved the success overall that he has. So I would say that finding your style is being motivated and passionate about a particular topic, and I think it's also a healthy dose of almost like childlike exploration. Whether it's combining compositional elements, locations. You see a lot of people who just like put themselves out there in terms of going to these exotic or these adventurous, difficult to get to locations. And they come out with amazing photos that nobody's seen before because nobody's had the wherewithal to go there, right? In thinking about this, I find in my own photography, and again, I'm a rank amateur, but you know, I get inspired by looking at other people's work, and then first off, maybe trying to emulate that look, mm-hmm. and then riffing off of that, exploring, you know, maybe new boundaries, taking images from different perspectives, you know, high, low, sideways, backwards. Kind of a weird story. Growing up in Tucson, I was kind of like a sci-fi nerd. And I used to be into drawing these fantastic renditions in my own kid's mind of spaceships, right? And so where would I get inspiration to draw spaceships? Well, certainly, you know, there's only so many times you can draw the USS Enterprise, right? So I would actually, two things I remember, our kitchen back in the 60s and 70s had these weird, like almost psychedelic decorative tiles in our kitchen. And so I would just go and I would sit there and stare at the tiles until something happened, you know, and then I would have a little notebook and sketch it out and go finish it. And then, you know, I was out, like many kids of that era, I was outside all the time, never inside. There weren't video games and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I would look at cactus and bark and, you know, on trees and, you know, dirt. I mean, I took inspiration from every place for these sci-fi or space scenes that I would create. And so, you know, I you know, bringing it back to photography, I think even when I go out, I try to slow down. Mm-hmm. I try to like get into the sort of the gestalt of the world. And you know, I guess I would suggest to you know, your listening audience and budding photographers who want to develop their own style, to take inspiration from others, but then, you know, kind of get into your own head, you know, get into your own world and try some different techniques. I mean, you know, software, I got to go back to it. It of course is wonderful for exploration. You know, you can take a single image and make 1,000 different variations of it in not too long a time. And so, you know, you don't want to, it depends on your slant. If you're going for kind of the natural landscape look, you know, or a very classic portrait, you don't want to muck around with it too much. But if it's a pure artistic vision, you know, the sky's the limit when you start, dabbling in the software side of things.
For sure. And, you know, one thing that I like to do is really play with the sliders. So I was playing in Aurora HDR, and it was awesome. And yeah, just seeing, you know, how far I can push it. And for me, when I'm experimenting, I like to push it a little too far and then dial it back just to test my limits, mm-hmm. which is totally fine. I know there's this fear of overdoing things, but I think sometimes we have to give ourselves permission to really push the boundaries to see what we can get.
You know, that's a great way of looking at things. Giving yourself permission is such a wonderful phrase. As you pointed out in the pre-interview talk we had, you know, you had interviewed Trey Ratcliffe mm-hmm. in the past, and he's a wonderful artist, visionary, you know, a travel photographer, etc. He and I have been friends for many years, since the Nick Software days, and you know, Trey helped us design Aurora. And so when you think about some of the sliders that you're moving, that his DNA is in a lot of that stuff, if
How
you will.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's pretty fun. And in fact, I don't know if you're up on the latest news, but we announced Aurora 2017 last week. So from this is going to have, you know, again, we've gone back to the well. We've done a lot of different things with it. And I think everybody who's used Aurora version 1 is going to be super stoked at what we've done with this next version, listening to their input, of course, and then pushing our own software and creative boundaries. So,
I had not heard that announcement.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, keep an eye out for that.
It should
be available in about 6 weeks.
Awesome. Well, by the time this recording goes live, it may be available already. I do these in advance. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
Awesome. And, you know, while we're having this discussion about style, I really want to stress to the audience how important it is getting the basics down of how to use your camera. That's a given. I mean, this day and age, really, if you're trying to make a business out of photography, learning how to use your camera is the easy part. The more difficult part is really distinguishing yourself from the sea of photographers out there. And two great ways to do that is with your style and also your marketing strategy, which we'll get to later in this interview. I was listening to Tim Wallace. I'm sure you know who Tim Wallace is, Kevin.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great guy. Oh, And he was at Photoshop World, but also out of Chicago before that. And he was teaching a class about the business of photography. And it was an hour and a half class. I only got to hear about maybe 30 minutes of it because I was actually manning one of the vendor booths. But anyway, one thing that really stood out to me was he was saying how important style is in that it sets you apart. And that especially with the higher end clients that are looking for higher end work and higher end photographers, it's the style that will make someone choose you over another photographer. So I really just want to urge our audience to really look at your work and look at your style and really try to find the style that feels right to you. Now, it'll constantly be evolving. That's normal. But you really have to look at what sets you apart. And I like, Kevin, I like it that you mentioned that we can emulate others' work and then kind of riff on it to make it our own. I feel there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. And that kind of takes some of the paralysis, the analysis paralysis out of it. Find someone that you like and then emulate their work and then put your own spin on it.
Yeah, I think that's a great philosophy. And you know, I think it also, you know, allows you it allows you to challenge yourself too. I don't know if you've had this experience, but there are times when I've looked at images that I admire and I'm thinking to myself, how on earth did they do that? and so the challenge of trying to figure out how they do that, it can be a great exercise in and of itself.
Right. Yeah. I go through that probably every day. So
I saw this image a couple days ago that my colleague here said literally launched somebody's career. And it was an image of, and I apologize, I can't remember the name of the photographer right now, which is terrible, but it was an image of two people sitting in chairs. And one of them, I think, had a horse head and the other one had a cat head on them. Right.
Huh.
And the unique thing about it was it looked like an ordinary kitchen environment, you know, kind of a circus 50s or 60s, you know, vintage kitchen. But there are two people here and they're sitting with animal heads, you know, on their bodies. Right. And then they were underwater except for their heads. So the human bodies were below the surface of the water and the photographer was kind of shooting through. From what I later read, some plexiglass, and she'd enclose this entire scene, in plexiglass inside of a tank, right?
Thinking outside the box, I like it.
Yeah, and pouring water in the box, and it was just mind blowing. And I have a friend that I met a while back, a long time ago, named J.P. Morgan, and he for a while. Last century, he was responsible for a ton of the movie posters coming out of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these are the ones where, you know, people are diving and bullets are whizzing and they're frozen in mid air. And J.P. Morgan, he was and still is fabulous at setting up those kind of shots all in camera. Okay, and so he would create these elaborate scenes. And literally have like one take to get the shot right.
Oh,
because
goodness.
After that, all the accessories and the things that were blowing up and falling off of the ceilings and, you know, and all the action was, you know, you'd have to kind of redo all of that if you missed the shot. So it's just, you know, challenging yourself, I guess, at some point.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan. I'm looking at his work right now, actually. And for the listeners, not the bank guy.
yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. This is a different guy.
And very giving too. Again, back to this notion of photographers being humble and helpful and friendly and fun. You know, here's a guy who, you know, is making his living doing, doing these posters and doing corporate and commercial work, and film work. He doesn't have to give anybody the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a fantastic living at his craft, but then, you know, stepping out from that, he's published books of photographs and He's also has a website where he publishes videos and tutorials on how he sets up these shots. So he's very giving in terms of his craft, and I think it's awesome because it inspires the next generation of creatives.
Definitely, definitely. And so I'm curious then, what have you found to be the most effective techniques that you've seen photographers use in order to get their style noticed?
Wow, that's a little bit of a tricky question.
I know, it's a loaded question, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I kind of go back to an earlier point where if you're passionate about a certain topic or discipline or style, you're going to do things that hopefully, you know, feel authentic and natural within that style, and people will notice you. As I mentioned earlier, that there's a serendipitous factor that goes on. You know, people saw this one woman's image of the people underwater, and it she blew up after that. I was talking with a National Geographic photographer last Friday. We had lunch here in town, one of his images was literally socially shared by National Geographic. Mm. And that launched his career. My good friend Adam L. Macias, he's a concert photographer that, you know, regularly hangs out with bands like Pierce the Veil and Sleeping with Sirens guys my 15-year-old daughter follows religiously. but you know, when he got a start, it was literally and he'll tell the story in dozen on his blog, of just growing up with the band, being friends with them in school, and when they got noticed and kind of had their arc of being signed and being headliners on the band's Warped Tour, because they knew Adam and because he was courageous enough to ask, mm-hmm. right? They kind of drew a hard line with the management and said, hey, if we're going to go out on tour on a bus or whatever, we want Adam to come along. We want him to be our embedded band photographer. And he tells me stories where, you know, he's sleeping on a bunk, just like the rest of the band guys, hanging out with them. And think about the access that gives you that nobody else has. We talked earlier about locations, but that can apply with all kinds of access, even in our own backyard. You probably hear from guys like Alan Hess and again, Adam and other concert photographers that sometimes simply writing to band management ahead mm-hmm. of time can get you press credentials to get into a concert, shoot the first few songs, and voila, you've got images that nobody else has access to, and so when we talk about getting style noticed, I mean, it's being dedicated to the craft, it's putting yourself out there. There's a little bit of serendipity. But I think that, depending on your goals, there are different tactics as well. And I'm kind of riffing here a little bit, but, if I was a new photographer and I knew that I wanted to be be on the national stage, mm-hmm. right, then I would do things like start a podcast, right? find ways to review manufacturers' products, maybe be very social. I might find a way to teach locally and turn that into workshops and enter photo contests, win a few photo contests. there's a fellow that I worked with many years ago at NIC named Travis Berg, and he's just completely blown up. Young guy, when I met him, I think he was just coming out of, he was maybe a freshman in college.
Wow.
He's now living out of his sort of custom-built, 4x4 Chevy van, touring the byways and highways of our country, taking these amazing shots, and he's blowing up on Instagram. He's got sponsors now. Here's an interesting twist. We talk about style. One of the things that I noticed that he did as his career took off, and certainly this isn't a 100% formula, but because he was traveling solo, he always tried to put himself in the shot. So think about standing on the edge of a canyon, you know, as dawn rises and the mists are coming up, right? You set up your tripod. Because he's an outdoorsman, he would stand on the edge of that cliff, and you know, with a cup of coffee or looking out with some field binoculars, whatever. You know, I'm just making half of this stuff up, but the point is, if you look at his Instagram feed, you'll see that in many many of the pictures, the backdrop is jaw-dropping, but for scale and perspective and for lifestyle, he's put himself in these images. And so when you look at a manufacturer that wants to maybe, you know, tap into the vibe of youth and outdoors and lifestyle, you know, you might look at his portfolio and say, wow, you're the guy that represent my brand. That's fantastic work you've done. I can envision my brand being a part of your story.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends on your goals. If you're just wanting local visibility, certainly, you know, yeah, gallery showings, you know, you've all been into a coffee shop where you've got some images for sale. You know, frame prints and things like that, donations to charitable auctions. You know, there's a million ideas, you know, for how to get the style noticed. At MacFun, you know, we are constantly, you know, looking for new photographers to shine a spotlight on, both in our social and in our blog. And, you know, many times we're going to our favorite, online galleries like 500px, you know, or Smug Mug or Flickr, and just looking for great photographers. And so, you know, we're finding these guys, you know, hopefully shine a little spotlight on them, you know, globally. And who knows, a few years from now, maybe they're the next rising stars.
If you're looking for a way to speed up your workflow and quickly take your photos to the next level, check out the professional Lightroom presets we're offering on ProPhotographerJourney.com. With a single click, use these presets as a solid starting point when editing your photos, and then customize each Lightroom effect to your liking. Your friends, family, and clients will be amazed at your photos. These preset styles include soft and subtle, all the way to dramatic and edgy. Just head to ProPhotographerJourney.com and check it out. And you know, Kevin, I'm looking over here at my notes, which I'm almost out of. I have a sheet of paper here. I'm gonna have to get another sheet of paper. You're causing me to write so many notes. I'm running out of space. Thanks.
that's my job.
You know, I really like the spin you put on that question, because even in my wording, in the question, I worded it in such a way that was passive. Which, okay, I really want to highlight this. So I asked you what you thought were the most effective techniques that photographers used to get their style noticed, which is a very passive way of looking at it. But your answer, basically, when you boil it down, it's put yourself out there. Instead of waiting to get noticed, it's to put your work out there so that people will notice you. So instead of waiting for someone to email you or knock on your door or say, hey, we want to feature your work, what I'm really getting out of this is that we need to put our work out there. Now, you gave the examples of photo contests, workshops, podcasts, gallery showings. These are all things that I think budding photographers might find intimidating, which is why I really like this list, because that's where the magic happens, right? Where it's when we're outside of our comfort zone. Pat Flynn over at Smart Passive Income, I listen to him a lot. And one of the things that he talked about a while ago on his episodes was that he had finally learned that when he was onto something that would advance his business, he always felt uncomfortable with it. And he always felt like he was outside of his comfort zone. And he finally learned that when he felt that feeling, instead of backing down, he knew he needed to advance forward with it and go through with it, for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, wasn't it Eleanor Roosevelt who said, do something that scares you every day?
I think so, yeah.
And so, you know, right along those same lines and, you know, I think you do have to do things that are uncomfortable. Well, one other thing that not only get your style noticed, but it might even be a little bit of a marketing tactic for budding photographers, is I'm a huge fan of the episodic series or you know, personal projects that morph into something great. I'm reminded of a photographer of a few years ago that I met named Jennifer Hudson, not mm-hmm. the singer, the photographer. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer stunned WPPI, and I'm talking maybe five, 6 years ago, with this series of toned black and white images that were so haunting in their in terms of their setup, the accessories. I'm trying to, you just got to look it up. It's hard to describe. If you think of okay, this is going to go off into a weird tangent here just for a moment.
Go for it.
But if you think of a lot of the urbex photography, where you might have an abandoned warehouse or a mental hospital that hasn't been open for, 50 years. Now, place models inside of those institutions and then light it well, have some kind of a weird story that causes the viewer to go, how did they get in that situation? Or what are they doing to that guy, right? Mm-hmm. And then you tone it in this haunting, sort of gothic, almost slightly sepia, black and white style, and you end up with an amazing image. Now, rinse and repeat that another dozen times, and you have this series that hangs together under a theme, right? She stunned WPPI 5 or 6 years ago. And I think of the five images from that series that she submitted, four of them earned 100 wow. scores. And I remember her, crying on stage as she accepted, the awards. And I'm thinking, wow, here's an artist that, maybe didn't even know the impact she was going to have on people.
So what you're saying, Kevin, is that we should be shooting even if we don't have a client or a gig lined up. We should still be doing these personal projects. Is that?
Oh yeah. Oh, that's. Well, I would argue that you should be shooting that most of the time. Flip the 80-20 around. Because look, your clients have they're going to be in a sense, and for the vast majority of photographers, the clients are going to be in the driver's seat. They know they need an executive headshot, or they know they need a diversity photograph for a community college, or they need an architectural shot for a brochure or an ad they're doing. So they're going to be kind of dictating things to some extent, unless you're kind of in that rare air where you have that trust factor with a client. You're able to play art director and photographer. So I would say, where a lot of photographers around the world get their creative yayas is in the personal projects, right?
Creative yayas. I have to write that down.
Go.
Yeah. And that's how you find your personal style as well.
Right. I think that's where you've got the freedom to develop it and experiment and on and on.
And earlier you mentioned the word serendipitous. And I really wanted to just to riff on that super quick. It's easy to look at these top photographers and say, oh, they're just lucky, or they got their big break because of luck, or, I wish that could happen to me. But what I find is that for those who seem to have this luck, they're the ones who've been working their butts off and they're willing to put themselves out there. And it seems like these opportunities may seem to fall into their lap, but they were already putting in the work. And so when that opportunity comes, it's like this odd correlation. It's the more you put yourself out there, the more opportunities come to you, the harder you're willing to work in a smart way, then the more opportunities come towards you and the more that you can take. And to me, it's so much more than just luck. It's hard work.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the world's not going to beat a path to your door. And I'm a huge believer in providence. I don't know if you've ever lost a job or anything like that. But I'm a huge believer in the, one door closes, two opens kind of attitude. And so, when I think about, when I think about this notion of serendipity or luck, or I think of the term providence, as being in that family of thoughts, where the world is gonna help you if you're just willing to be helped.
Yeah,
I guess, and I guess that's a corollary to your point about, you know, luck doesn't necessarily always make itself. You're putting yourself out there. You're working hard. You're developing your craft. You're keeping a positive attitude. You know, I talk to a lot of photographers, especially in these transitional times that we're in right now, where so many people have smartphones. So you can go down to Costco and buy a $500 or $600 kit camera, and the extra lens they throw in there, and hang your shingle out as a photographer. You know, it's got to bum a lot of these pros who spent decades, you know, on their craft. Mm-hmm. It's got to bum everybody out when, you know, a guy who's been running his own studio for 20 years. Is competing against, and no offense meant here, but is competing against the very new photographer, maybe on their first camera, who's exploring photography for the first time, mm-hmm. who suddenly posts on a neighborhood bulletin board that, you know, he or she is available to take newborn photos.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, all of a sudden, the guy who's been taking newborn photos for, you know, 25 years. Is competing against somebody who, you know, probably doesn't even know they're competing with that person, right? I happen to live in a neighborhood in San Diego where there's this service called Nextdoor, which is it's a neighborhood or a community-based forum. And if you need a gardener, if you need a handyman, if you're wondering about an insurance agent or whether a car is, get, you know, warranty is worth it or whatever, or if you need a photographer, right? Mm-hmm. People are going on these neighborhood bulletin boards and says, hey, I need some candid shots of my senior in high school, before he gets too old, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily picking up they're not leafing through the yellow pages or doing a Yelp search or anything like that. They're asking their neighbors. And so the competition is more fierce. So this gets back to your notion of developing your own style and also putting yourself out there. I think it's just a very, very tricky time for a lot of photographers. And so keeping a positive attitude and constantly kind of reinventing, you know, how you look at the world and how you market yourself is super important.
That could be its own episode. Oh my goodness. That's huge. The challenges that we face and how you set yourself apart from everybody. So here in Michigan, well, I'm sure it's like this in every state, we have a million photographers, right? I don't know what the number is, but like there are a ton of photographers out there. And there's that challenge of how do you set yourself apart from the competition? Now, for those that have been doing it for decades, it's how do you set yourself apart from those who just picked up a cheap whatever DSLR and, like you said, hang the shingle out saying, hey, I'm a photographer. How do you set yourself apart from them and the quality that you provide? But also, if you're a new starting out photographer, how do you get traction? Now, I see so many photographers kind of by default do a couple things. Number one, they start charging just about nothing, or they try to undercut the photographer down the street, hoping to pull their business away, but not realizing that when you are trying to be the cheapest photographer, it's a race to the bottom. Like, trust me, I've tried this.
I couldn't agree with you more. Do you know Sarah Petty at all? Have you run into Sarah?
I have not.
Her business partner, Aaron Verback. So they run a company called Joy of Marketing, joyofmarketing.com. And they've written a book a couple years ago called Worth Every Penny. If memory serves. And so it's exactly about this issue. And trust me, all small businesses, you know, face this. If you're a new pest control guy or a housekeeper just starting out, you know, you think that price is your only way to differentiate yourself. And I'm here to tell you it's not true.
Not at all.
You'll be fooled into thinking it's true. And by the time you realize it's too late. And I think in the software analogy, bless their souls, but the App Store has been the bane of a lot of software firms.
Mm.
It is a race to the bottom when you have people, you know, working in their garages, who would have ordinarily gone and maybe started businesses, employed people, and started their own software companies. You know, they're building apps in their garages, putting them out on the App Store, and again, hoping the world beats a path to the door. And yet, the only way to get traction, oftentimes, for these guys, is to price their products at 99 cents. $2.99,
yeah.
$4.99, and nobody can make a living at that.
No,
trust me.
No.
You've got to be one of the 1% of 1% of 1% of those millions of apps in there that sell enough volume to make any kind of living, any kind of a sustainable living, you know, at a 99 or $4.99 price point.
Definitely.
And look, I think it's a great way to start, but the successful software developers, and I'll bring this back to photography in a minute, but the successful software photographers are doing the things that we're talking about right now, which is developing, you know, completely unique applications, or doing something, or looking at the competition, or looking and being inspired by a software category, and then making it so much better than anybody else is offering, and hopefully charging a commensurate amount, for the effort. The photography category in mobile is super, super competitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that MacFun had been doing for a number of years, and we've still got some very popular mobile apps out there on the iOS iPhone system, but in 2011, you know, late 2010, 2011, when the Mac App Store appeared in the operating systems, it was clear that was where we needed to be if we wanted to thrive and grow as a company. It's been a good decision for us to build photography apps for desktop guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So again, kind of tying it back to photography, you know, in the same way that you're going to find your own style and niche by maybe emulating what's out there, doing something completely different, you know, software guys are in the same boat.
Yeah, yeah. And a very important question that I think we as photographers should ask ourselves is, do we want to be a volume photographer? So we kind of touched on it being a race to the bottom when you're trying to undercut the competition. But how many $100 photo shoots do you have to shoot in a month in order to pay the bills, as opposed to $1,000 photo shoots? How many of those do you need in order to make a living? And that
That's
all ties
right.
into lifestyle as well. And I'm seeing so many photographers, and again, I've made just about every mistake in the book. So I've seen photographers out there charging next to nothing and feel like they're doing a zillion shoots and they still can't make ends meet at the end of the month. All this to say, for those who are afraid of charging what you're worth, you should absolutely do it. I know there's that fear that, oh, well, I'll get fewer clients. Is that such a bad thing? Or rather, the clients that are a better fit for you and willing to invest, they'll come to you. You'll attract more of the type of clients that you want. And what I have found is that with higher end, charging higher prices, you attract a different kind of person to you. So I found that the clients who want to pay next to nothing for photography, they can be headaches. Now, this is just a general blanket mm-hmm. term. I'm not knocking anyone in particular, but the people who are penny pinchers, they can be such a headache to deal with as a client with a photography business. It can be a headache. But the ones who are willing to pay more, what you'll find is that they respect you and they trust your judgment more. And
right.
and they're more willing to let you be your own creative self, because if you're charging more, you also have your own style, right? Your own unique style. And that's also why they like you.
Right, right.
So
I would also add on to that the clients that are willing to trust you and pay what you're asking and pay what you're worth probably run in circles and have friends that are a lot like them as well.
Yes.
So from a referral
yes.
standpoint, which is super important in the photography world, from a referral standpoint, they can be great clients as well.
Absolutely.
You know, I gotta tell you a little story real quick about a photographer friend of mine named Dan Hughes. And Dan worked with me at Nick Software, and he worked at MacFun as well, and helped us design our black and white editing program, which is called Tonality. And Dan left MacFun when he got an invitation to go back and be a an associate professor at RIT, which, as you know, is one of the country's, maybe the world's, one of the world's leading photography schools, and it's based in Rochester.
Yeah.
So Dan, for a long time here in San Diego, you know, he's working for Nick Software, doing his thing, he's being our education guy, always kind of technically very, very proficient, super cool, super chill, nice guy. Well, he got introduced to some people at a museum here in San Diego called MOPA. It's a Photography Arts Society, right? Museum of Photography Arts. And so by those introductions, he ended up being a personal teacher to several of the board members at MOPA. Wow. And they were paying him. There were times when he would take trips with some of his clients just to kind of, you know, help them along. When they had problems with their wide format, you know, their many thousands of dollars that they just spent on a wide format printer, you know, for their home office, you know, he would be the guy they'd call to come set up the printer, show them how to use it, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the referrals that he got in terms of other clients were magical. I mean, they were just, I mean, you can't operate at a higher clientele than the benefactors of a museum in the seventh largest city in America. I mean,
it's
pretty spectacular. And so, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But I think, you know, putting yourself out there and you know, more to the point of the question, you know, being courageous enough to charge what you're worth and stick to those guns. I mean, the thing that kills me the most is when I hear about new wedding photographers who shoot the wedding and hand the disc over.
No,
I mean, that's just, I just want to stab out my eyes when I
and you know what, their clients probably do as well, want to stab out their eyes when they get that disc of images and have to sort through like 1,000 photos.
Oh yeah. My friend Tony Corbell, who's very well known as a wedding and photographer and a lighting expert. Mm-hmm. You know, Tony's been a teacher, owned multiple studios. And you know, he once told me that you know, he got asked that question all the time, and he would just flat out say no. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the scenes of the day, and I'm not only going to not show you the images that I think, you know, I'm not going to include you in that image selection process, but at the end of this, you just have to trust me to deliver a wedding album to you.
Wow.
And that wedding album will be the most spectacular, you know, collection or rendition of images of the day. It'll tell the story, and you'll cherish it the rest of your lives. But I'm not going to let you in on the creative process. And this is a guy who spent, you know, 30 plus years being very successful at his craft. Mm-hmm. But I can bet, and I'd have to ask him, but I can bet a lot of people walked under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And, but the ones that stayed trusted his expertise.
Oh, and they were delighted with the results. I mean,
yeah.
This guy's a camera craftsman. He's one of 30 camera craftsmen in the country. So, you know, once you achieve that level, you know, it's more important than ever to kind of stick to what you know and you know, stick to your guns when it comes to pricing and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think as time goes on, for those who are new at it, it does get easier to say that, for example, to say that it may be your policy not to give out discs with the images, for example. And, you know, there's a ton of that goes on here in Michigan, and I used to do that as well. And it's, I see it as a disservice. Now, it depends on the niche or the type of photography that you're doing. So for weddings, which is a great example, I know the first wedding I did, I handed over a CD of images and it was like 700 photos. And the couple thought that was what they wanted. That's what they asked me for.
Right.
But when they got it, they were so overwhelmed that they didn't look at it for like a year.
Oh, boy. Well, and also, I mean, let's be fair. You know, not everybody's as tech savvy or as photo savvy as maybe you are, you know, when you look at these images, you're looking at them from a judgment, a critical eye. You're
right.
using tools maybe like Lightroom or some image browsers to help you select and rate images.
Yeah.
I mean, if I handed a disc over to somebody who didn't have that background and experience, you know, what would they do? They'd open them up in Apple Preview or, you know, some Infran Viewer.
Right. Like, how many hours of work is that for them? It's like a million hours.
And so, you know, your point about it actually being a disservice to them,
yeah.
even though that's what they're asking for,
they
really don't know what they're asking for.
Exactly.
What they really want is for somebody who's an expert at their craft to show them the best images.
Yeah, and even getting it printed, putting it in physical form. Now, if you do give them a CD of images, a disc of images or whatever, and they do end up printing some for themselves, are they going to go to the Walmart or the Costco down the street, get it printed, and have it turn out with this like weird greenish tint or whatever, and put
right.
that up on the wall, and then every time they look at it, they know it's kind of not right, and you know they think of you every time they look at it because you took the shot, so that's representing your work. You know, it's just this whole, okay, I have to stop myself from ranting.
It's a slippery slope. I know.
Right.
And so, I think your listening audience does too.
Yeah, and I may have to do a whole separate episode about this because I just made a short list while we were talking as far as different ways to set yourself apart from the crowd of other photographers and the challenges that we face. And so I'm just going to rattle them off very quickly here, six things. So as far as the ways that we can set ourselves apart as photographers, number one, pricing, as in don't try to be the cheapest person out there, but know what your expenses are, know how much you want to save every month, know how much expertise you bring to the table, charge what you're worth. Number two, knowing who your ideal client is. So this involves not saying yes to everybody because you don't want to serve everybody. You should know who your ideal client is, what type of person you want to serve. And of course, this depends on the type of photography that you do. But knowing what style they like, what they're willing to spend, what would satisfy them the most, and really trying to attract the higher quality client. Number three, customer service. So that's something that we didn't mention, but as far as setting yourself apart, customer service goes a heck of a long way with photography. I mean, answering your phones, answering emails, those are a given, really. But, you know, even like sending thank you cards afterwards, just making your client feel like they're, you know, $1 million. That's huge. Number four is the specific niche that you're in. So, for example, and Tim Wallace, I think he gave this example. If you say that you're a car an auto photographer, okay, we'll niche that down even further. Like what type of cars or what type of auto machine? So not always trying to be the everything photographer and specializing in nothing. Consider specializing in something. Number five, your personal style. We talked about that in this episode. Number six, also delivering physical products, having that be the end goal of a shoot. And this really applies with family portraits, weddings, that type of thing. So
I think it can also apply to deliver, you know, you say physical product. I think delivering a project or having a goal of what you're going to deliver at the end is important. So many people these days are sharing their images online.
Mm.
Again, I think one of my good friends, Douglas Saunders, is an automobile photographer, and he got, you know, among other things, he got to start shooting Hollywood replica cars or Hollywood cars. So the old Batmobile or the Ghostbusters,
cool.
you know, ambulance. And he would totally light it and set it. You know, he found the guy, you know, who owned a car that replicated the original Mad Max, for example.
Nice.
And the guy, you know, he got the guy to don his Mad Max leather jacket, you know, boots and stuff, and he lit it perfectly. So Douglas kind of got that, but that was his passion. He loves this stuff. I met him. He invited me to a shoot at Jay Leno's garage a few years back. And that was just like the penultimate, you know, place for a car photographer was, you know, talking, you know, interviewing Jay, taking shots of the steam engines that in the guy's collection, et cetera, et cetera. But my point was that in many ways he would challenge himself to, if he had a particular project like that, to actually buff it out and write a story about it. Take a little behind the scenes, come out with these great still images, but then just, you know, have an, in this case, the end product wasn't a physical print, but rather it was the this story that encapsulated the entire experience. And so I would just add that to your to your list of end products. But great summary. Great summary of what we've been talking about.
Thank you. That's the caffeine kicking in.
Right on.
Well, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the interview, which always makes me sad because I could probably talk about this for hours.
I'm sad too.
Especially with marketing. But could you tell us, Kevin, is there a particular photography resource, tool, online course, book, whatever that you would recommend to our listeners to help them with their photography businesses?
Okay, I'll just be real quick. Again, I'd like to recommend the joyofmarketing.com and Sarah Petty and Aaron Verbeck. I think they've written the Bible to help you be courageous and charge what you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of resources out there, again, for tutorials on how to accomplish camera techniques, how to set up lighting. You know, the strobist is great for that. I tend to subscribe to a lot of email lists. Mm-hmm. So places like Petapixel, Photographer, and follow a lot of pros on Facebook and Instagram. These are things that I can do casually, and I can consume them when I need to. Mm-hmm. So I think in terms of sort of learning photography and kind of being inspired on a daily basis, I would say, you know, absolutely subscribe to a lot of these things. Maybe move them into a separate folder so when you've got a few extra minutes, you can do that. One last thing I would say is don't entirely dismiss things like local groups like the ASMP or the local PPA chapter.
Yeah.
Get involved with meetups. There in San Diego alone, I mean, there's dozens of photography meetups. I hang out with a guy named Stephen Burns, who heads the Photoshop group. There's 2,500 people in his Photoshop group here.
Oh my
now.
Goodness.
And so when he, you know, and a lot of that stuff doesn't apply to me. I mean, he's creating these fantastical things with a Wacom tablet and, you know, and things. But some of the stuff like compositing and color management for Photoshop users, those are kind of things that I've even picked up on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just end on this, that even though they can sometimes be a little costly, taking a workshop is a fantastic way to really immerse yourself in your craft and in a particular environment. If you can take yourself out of your day-to-day grind and go away for 2 or 3 days and be in a workshop with other like-minded photographers taught by somebody that you aspire to or that has inspired you over the years, it's a life-changing experience. And there's a lot of guys that are doing that. I'm not saying you need to go on a 10-day, excursion to Indonesia with, Ilaya Licardi, although that's a great one. but even workshops in your own backyard, if they're can really open your mind and expand your mind. And again, you're going to be in an environment where it's immersive. You're with like-minded people and everybody's social. They're going to give their advice. There's going to be some downtime for a little networking and just getting to know one another. And again, if you pick the right workshop leader, they're going to have sometimes decades of advice and have been through everything that you're arcing through right now. So, hats off to workshop leaders.
Yeah, I second that. That can be a game changer for sure. For sure. Cool. Well, my last question, but one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online, Kevin.
Oh, geez. Well, you'd mentioned that you were going to mention that. And again, I would stand up and shout from the rooftops, I'm not a pro photographer. I'm an amateur guy. So I'm on Instagram. I'm Kay LaRue, KLARUE, there. You can find, my work on macfun.com. I write several of the blog posts.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my own personal blog, which is on Blogspot, Kay LaRue again. But I'm out there if people want to find me.
And could you spell
But
Mac Fun for those who may not know?
sure, Mac Fun is MacPhun.
Perfect. And even though you're not necessarily a pro photographer, you rub shoulders with the top photographers in the world. And I so appreciate you chatting with us because your perspective on finding your own style and marketing techniques, those are golden jewels that photographers need to hear, especially with our own businesses. I've said this before and I'll say it again. When you're trying to run your own business, it's like 20% taking photos and 80% business stuff.
Yeah,
So I so
yeah.
appreciate your knowledge of the business side.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on board. And I know we might have run a little long here,
That's
but
okay.
as you
It's good
say, we
stuff.
could, the two of us are like peas in a pod. We could talk for hours.
I'm
So
telling you.
I really appreciate your time this morning.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.